And welcome back to the Omni Gamers Club podcast. My name is Mark Uessa.
And I am Daniel Winter.
That's right. We're here to discuss the featured game. It's time to jump down a scary dark hole under the floorboards because we are discussing The Binding of Isaac, Four Souls tabletop game.
Don't forget to bring a shovel.
That's right. So, tell us about the game. Who designed this? When did it come out?
Well, so this is originally came out in 2018, but there's been a couple of different sort of remasters and expansions since then. But this is designed by Edmund McMillan, the main creator of the original video game, artist by Crystal Fleming, and published by Maestro Media, amongst others, for sort of, there's a lot of different localized versions, but I believe they did the North American version. So, yeah, bit of sort of backdrop to this one, I guess. The Binding of Isaac, the video game, originally came out in, I should have looked this up, but it was over 10 years ago. It's been a while.
Ancient history of indie games, I guess.
Yes, yeah. So I've got a bit of history with this. I don't believe you do.
No, I haven't played nearly as much. In fact, I started playing the updated version, Rebirth, Binding of Isaac Rebirth, because I knew we were playing this game, so only within the last month.
Okay, so I thought we don't want to dwell on this too much, but just for a bit of sort of background information and context, just quickly talk about that. So the original video game is a roguelike. In fact, it's one of the first to sort of popularize this modern wave of roguelikes, alongside Spelunky, I think, was the main one just before this. So it's very much like a Zelda dungeon crawler. This is the old school Zelda where it's a one screen that you're moving through, one screen at a time, but very randomized. You're going down various floors, each floor getting harder and harder. You're finding a lot of random items, which I think is the main sort of distinguishing factor. There's like about 150, I think, items in the original, and then like Pokemon, they just add more and more for each expansion. I think it's like 700, 900 now. But each item changes Isaac, the principal character, in some fundamental ways, whether it's their attack is faster or they move faster, or they're shooting lasers, or now bombs are a lot more common. And both those items are randomized, but they also combine in different ways. So you might get two that combine in sort of, they sort of equal a third item that's different for two separately, right? So a lot of different customization options there, but it's customization in the sense of it being completely random. You never know exactly what item you're going to get. It's always a bit of a luck of the draw. There's a lot of different factors for random chance to be entered into this game. A lot of secrets to find, and a big sense of progression, I think, is the other main element in that hitting certain sort of goalposts, like beating a certain boss or finding the secret or beating the game X times will unlock new items that sort of adds to the pool of items that you can find, right? And or new characters that function a little bit differently. So I put like hundreds of hours into this game back in the day. I think I was playing it on PlayStation primarily when Rebirth, the remastered version, came out. I remember platinuming that. So that took like probably several hundred hours for that back before I had a kid. So this was some time ago. I've not played it in a while though. So what did you find?
Yeah, in comparison, I've played like maybe 1 hour of this game all told between multiple runs. I've not gotten very far in this game. It's actually fairly difficult. I mean, it's not like Elden Ring or something like that, but it's just kind of really limited in scope. It's just like the old Zelda games, like you said, like you're going to get hit by some Octoroks in those old Zelda games, right? No matter how skilled you are.
Sometimes you just roll bad.
Yeah. Sometimes just the way that the terrain is set up, you're going to get hit. So I haven't gotten very far in that. Of what I noticed was, it does feel quite old, even the remastered Rebirth version, but I understand it is a seminal title. It was a very influential title. A lot of games that I've played and enjoyed that have come out after it have obviously taken in a lot of the DNA of this game.
Absolutely.
So I recognize that a great deal. One thing that's a hallmark of this game as well is that's carried on into the board game, which is what we're talking about tonight, is the very strong, distinct art style.
And
also the aesthetic, which is different from the art style, is this kind of like gross out bio
body horror
like aesthetic.
Mm.
And a bit of a dark and disturbing story, which is different from the moment-to-moment gameplay. So I don't want to delve into that too deep because I'm sure we're going to talk about that.
I think it's worth touching on, especially because it's one of the main elements that crosses over with the card game. So that's the video game, basically, just to set some context for what's going into this. I do still quite like that game. Again, it's dated quite a bit in terms of it not respecting the time, as opposed to something like Hades or Children of Morta, where there's these sort of meta progression elements that you're pushing forward, story or narrative, basically. This doesn't have that. This is just, I mean, you're adding to the pool of items, and the game does kind of get easier because you're just getting more powerful items. But there's a lot of grindiness to get to that point, basically. And you just keep playing until you've had enough.
Yep. Just like the old school rogue likes, which is, I guess this is closer to a rogue like in the sense that when you die, you die. You start from the beginning. Mm. And what you're doing when you play a game like that is you're improving you, the player. That's the only way you get farther in rogue likes.
Yeah, so like each run in Binding of Isaac, the video game, you always start basically at the same power level. It's not like you're increasing yourself like in Hades does it too, but what was the Rogue Legacy?
Rogue Legacy.
Every Binding of Isaac game starts the same. It's just that you might have different a bigger pool of items that you might find along the way.
Right. So what type of game is this then? Well, it's definitely a card game. There's no denying that. There's no board per se in this that I can think of. It's a whole lot of cards. It comes in this interestingly shaped box. It's more similar to a set box. Of magic box, magic cards. And mark that word, Magic the Gathering is going to come up later.
Yeah.
More than once. So it's entirely card-based. You'll need some tokens, but in my box they weren't provided. Only some coin tokens were, actually.
Yeah. I should mention here, so we did receive a review copy in full disclosure. It just so happens that when the review copy arrived, I had just happened to buy my own copy of the game at TCTC, our local convention that we discussed previously. In the sort of secondhand game sale there, I bought the sort of super deluxe Kickstarter chest that you can see behind me if you're watching. So that has a lot more sort of tokens and additional components and promos and other add-ins. But you're playing with just the basic, the bare bones deck box with just cards, basically.
Yeah, I benefited from the review copy, but thankfully we were able to both play it, and we're covering today as a result. And I also got the Four Souls. Sorry, is it the Four Souls or the Requiem expansion?
Yeah,
Four Souls. The game base game is called Binding of Isaac Four Souls. So back to the basics. It's a card game. It can be played co-op, but it's mostly competitive.
Mm.
Because Binding of Isaac, to my knowledge, the video game is not multiplayer, right? It's just single player.
No. I did see something about like an alpha for like an Isaac Online. I don't know any details about that though.
Interesting. Maybe it'll be like that Zelda Four Swords or whatever that was.
Yeah, but no. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to describe the gameplay, the moment to moment gameplay, but it's kind of like, it's very kind of the Magic the Gathering inspired, but obviously like a multiplayer version, and it has elements of tableau building,
it's of hand management,
and just a lot of like take that.
Yeah, I mean, the other big comparison would be Munchkin, basically.
Sure.
That you've got a huge doom stack of cards that largely a bunch of monsters and items that you're working through. Kick down the door, what monster's behind it, basically, right? With a healthy dose of take that.
Yeah, and thematically, I think you're also going to be reminded of other games like Boss Monster, or even one that I picked up recently at TCTC, which we spoke about briefly, called Gather Your Party, which is a smaller indie game. But yeah, this is well trod ground. This sort of you go out and you attack monsters and you reap the rewards and buy power ups sort of game.
Yeah, so the core structure being the game is called Four Souls. You win by being the first person to collect four souls. So there's no progression here. So in the original video game, you're working through multiple levels, right? You start with the basement and like the catacombs, then down into like the deeper levels, and that where it's getting progressively harder and harder. Here, there's just one big stack of monsters. Some of those will give you various, like, might give you money or items or treasure. Some of them will have a soul. When you beat them, you now have that soul, and you need to collect four of them, basically. There's a couple of other ways you might get a soul. Some sort of basically mini achievements shared around the table. You might be able to steal some souls from other players, but primarily you're trying to fight monsters by getting souls. You're also managing a hand of, there's also a huge stack of treasures and items, which are like sort of treasures being permanent items. The stack is loot. Is basically one-off items generally, right? And you're sort of managing a hand of those. The treasures being your permanent items are sort of comboing in some unique ways. And that's probably the primarily way this relates to the video game, in that you're collecting a sort of mishmash of items and trying to find new synergies for combining them in powerful ways.
Yeah, and we should say that there is a cast of characters which, similar to Binding of Isaac, over time you can unlock more than just the base character of Isaac. There's other characters that you'll unlock, and the art style is very similar. I should try and pull out some of these cards while I'm talking. Most of them are very much the same, right?
Yeah, I mean, broadly, the core characters are the same. The difference is they each start with a different item. So every character starts with a unique item. Isaac starts with a D6 to re-roll a dice. I think it's Samson. Yeah, it starts with the Blood Rage, I think, that lets you power up an attack. So they all start, every character does start a little differently. There's even some cameos. I think you might have that version with the expansion. I've got the Knight from Hollow Knight. You can play as him, or the Silent from Slay the Spire. So there's some cameos from other roguelikes that you might recognize here. But yeah, largely it's all the favorites from Binding of Isaac are here.
Yeah, you're largely distinguished by your eternal item, which is an item that essentially can't be taken away from you, even by the use of some other power cards. So it's just kind of like your unique special sauce. Mm.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of the interactions here. So, as I said, you're trying to get four souls. You can go, like, you're attacking monsters. You pick a monster that you want to fight. There's two face up, or you can choose a random one from the stack, and then you roll a dice until either you or the monster dies, broadly, right? There's a bunch of ways you might influence that. You have items that you can deactivate.
TM.
We might suit if we say tap. But crucially, here's one of the other big Magic the Gathering inspirations, is you can tap your cards on other players' turns. Right?
That's right.
Isaac has a dice, and that lets you re-roll a dice. And I can do that on my turn, because I failed a roll against the monster. I'll tap my dice, I can re-roll it. Or you just rolled a successful attack on a monster. I can tap my item and force you to re-roll it against yourself. So most of the items here have this quite versatile in how you choose to use them, both offensively or defensively. I think one of the cooler elements here, though, is that it encourages bartering. So you can make deals. I can say, hey, give me $5. Cents is the currency here. And I'll let you re-roll your dice. Or I'm going to steal an item. I want to steal one of your items unless you pay me $5. And then I'll steal it from Jack over there instead.
Yeah, so, I thought this was a really central part of the game. Mm. And I know that some play groups are going to love it or leave it. But I think it's kind of this game's special sauce. It reminds me of a lot more kind of interactive game designs like, I mean, Catan to a degree has a bit of that with the trading. You have games like Sidereal Confluence, which is all about negotiation. I can think about some more raucous games like maybe some of the other games by that pair of designers who did, who was it, Cosmic Encounter?
Oh,
as a little bit sure. in the original Dune, I forget their names, but they designed a lot of
negotiation games, right?
Negotiation yeah. and interaction in their design. Mm. And I think that this is great. It's just a light touch of it. Obviously, if you're playing with a group of just like two, for instance, the other player could just shut you down and say like, no, I'm not negotiating with you at all. But even in my two-player game, which I played with my oldest kid, I really enjoyed it. And we came into some interesting setups of, you know, kind of just kind of poking and digging at each other.
Well, it starts out, you want to help each other, right? You, I help you, you, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. And then as the game progresses, you start, the knives start coming out, right? So there's an interesting evolution as the game progresses. And I broadly don't like negotiation games or like social deduction games. Like anything where you have to sort of improvise, I have to argue for a point, right? But I find there's enough structure here that I don't have to really worry about that. It's like, I have money, you have something I want, let's make a trade, right?
I had a very interesting arc in playing, learning how to play this game, because the first game I played was with you, and who was it? With the other Danny at your house. So we played a three-player game, and I believe we tried cooperative first.
Yeah, let's get to cooperative a little later, but we played,
But of course, with general cooperative games, the goal is to help each other, right? So we used our abilities to the general good, and basically, we succeeded handily, even with the time limit, and all was well, and it was actually fairly light and breezy.
Yes.
And then I played my next couple of games with my oldest kid, and we had we're a bit more competitive with each other. And just a really interesting setup. So probably some of this is going to be lost on listeners until we explore some of the more of the basics, but I had a card that let me, I had Maggie, she has a card called Yum Heart, and that basically means when I take damage, I can redirect it to another player, right? So I had that one, and then my oldest kid was playing Isaac, and Isaac has a card that's called the D6 or something like that.
Yeah.
And D6 lets you reroll a die. So my oldest kid was trying to barter the ability for me to reroll a die, but so that I would not take a hit to damage myself when I missed attacking a monster. But if I took the damage, I could redirect it to right back to them. So I realized I don't have to take that deal because I can benefit. I don't have to pay, and they will still reroll it for me. So that's just one of those instances of a devious case where just the right combination of powers can like totally kind of upend the dynamic of the gameplay.
And those items are constantly shifting and changing and comboing in different ways. So those deal value of those deals is constantly shifting, right? So yeah, I thought that was one of the better elements because it just keeps everyone engaged, especially in a four-player game. You're always watching everyone else's turn. Like every dice roll, you're watching for opportunity where you can either step in to help or interfere.
Yeah, let's loop it back since we talked about fighting. So we talked how the main goal of the game is to get four souls. Well, how do you get four souls? The primary way is monsters. I think you mentioned that. But some monsters, but not all, have souls. And I believe even some of the monsters that do have souls have more than one. I don't think they're very common, but I think that is possible that there might be monsters, boss monsters that have more than one.
To get into the philosophical nature of existence and who gets to have a soul here.
So you have to fight the monsters. And your character has hit points, as you also have an attack. I think every character has two hit points and one attack for the
most
part.
There are some exceptions, but most of them, yes, that's right. the core stats.
So all the monsters also have hit points. They also have an attack of various sizes and values, but they also have a kind of a two-hit value. And the two-hit value is a value on a d6. To attack, you roll a d6. You have to get that value or higher to score an attack on it. You deal the damage that your hero equal to their hit rate, hit damage. So that's fairly simple, easy to understand. But it's not just one attack, is it? You have to attack and fight until one side is defeated.
Someone will die.
Yes. And you don't have to attack on your turn. I think it's your choice, unless driven by some other effect, that you have to fight a card. But if you choose to attack, it's to the death. So the flip side of that is, say, for instance, it's an attack on a 3+. If I roll a 2, and I have no other way of re-rolling that attack die, d6 of a value of a 2 or a 1, then I get hit back by the monster's attack value. Mm-hmm. And that's the very basic way that the attack resolution works, because wouldn't you know it, this wide cast of monster characters and baddies, they all have a wide range of interesting effects that can trigger depending on what die you roll. Something happens when the monster dies. Something happens.
Splash damage to other players. Right. They might destroy items. They might have a passive effect that say, oh, every time someone rolls a 5, they have to discard a card.
Yeah. So quite often, even if you're playing competitively, there still might be cases where you might have to, or you might want to kind of coordinate with your fellow players to, you know, fight this monster versus the second monster. And you don't actually have to fight either of the monsters in the slots, because you can always fight the monster at the top of the monster deck.
Yeah. It's a bit of a gamble, but
yeah, if you choose that card kind of supersedes a monster that's visible. You just stack it on top and you just ignore the one below it. And not just monsters. There are also event cards in the monster deck. And you can kind of have this like cascading effect where, say, you defeat a monster, the next card in his event, the active player still takes the benefits of that card, and then the next card after that is an event, and the next card after that is an event. These sorts of things can happen.
Mm. Yeah, and so I think we mentioned death there. I think that's what I wanted to talk about next, is that you fight a monster and fail, you're going to die. And you probably will die several times over the course of any given game. That's a given. So you said you only have 2 life broadly. And when you die, you have to lose
2 hit points.
You discard a treasure. You discard a loot card from your hand and you lose 1 cent and everything taps, your turn ends. So it can be quite punishing. You lose quite a bit, but I mean, start of the game, you won't have much to lose. But the moment you start building up any kind of engine, that can all crumble if you die. And I did find, like, this is one of the weaker elements I found. It's just how easy it is to die. Both this fighting, a fight with a monster could go bad, but there's also a bunch of effects that you can use to damage other players in various ways. You could do 2 damage to other players in multiple ways, or even just 1 damage. Monster deals, like, you take roll unlucky, monster hits you for 1. I have a bomb, it does 1 damage, I throw that at you, you're dead. So it can be all over very, very quickly. And I found that a little tricky to actually build up any sense of progression or just momentum in the game. It was hard to get. When my items were constantly being destroyed, I could never really get much sense of an engine going.
Yeah,
it's possible that's going to be different game to game. It's just how much aggressive cards come up, obviously. But that was a concern when I played.
I think it is going to be very different from game to game from the few games that I played. I only played 3, but I played all of them to completion, and they were of varying lengths and very different play styles and very different outcomes. So like the video game, life in The Binding of Isaac Four Souls is cheap. Expect to die. And also fortunes, I didn't really find this in the video game, but fortunes can swing to your favor very quickly. So one player might cascade and have a hand of, you know, 8-9 cards, like by the second or third round. And then the other player is just has no items, no cards in their hands, and no money, and because they just keep dying. So it's very swingy. It's very quote unquote unfair. A lot of people are going to be fine with that and think it's a blast, you know, very beer and pretzels.
Yeah,
jokes, kind of laughs among the friends. Chaos,
right? Like,
but it's, yeah, that's the it's type very of game chaotic. Yeah, and a lot of people are going to be turned off by that, and I don't doubt the people listening. If you know that that's you, that's probably going to affect you to a great deal. This game is there's no sense of fairness whatsoever, but there is a great deal of gameplay variety in the way that the games can play. So I said my first game was cooperative with you. The second game I played, the first two-player game I played with my oldest kid, lasted like close to 2 hours. It was like a kind of a grueling game, and it was fine. Was
it learning it with him, or was
no,
it just
no it wasn't
mechanics?
No, we picked it up very quickly. my oldest is familiar with games like Magic the Gathering and a lot of board games, so it wasn't hard to pick up the mechanics of it. But just the way that, like, not a lot of souls came out,
right?
You know,
yeah,
they might not a lot of monsters,
or yeah,
just with the way that the deck was shuffled, not a lot of monsters with souls came out. So that game lasted closer to an hour and a half, 2 hours. The game I played most recently with my oldest kid lasted close to 30 minutes. Bunch of cards with souls came out.
That's probably roughly what you want. And that's, I think that's what they advertises itself as, a half-hour game.
Yeah. And the first game I played, I did not play with the extra souls. So in addition to the monsters, there are these extra soul cards which have a condition like be the first to hold two cards of this type, be the first to have 10 or more loot cards in hand, be the first to have 25 or more cents. So it's a secondary goal, and I think the expansion adds more of these.
Yes.
And you deal out, what, three of them?
Three, broadly.
Optionally, yeah. Per game. So I think probably if you want to have a relatively speedy game, you're going to want to include those, especially past your kind of first training game.
You can also customize the deck, because I know once you start throwing in all of the expansions to one big deck, that's obviously going to increase the likelihood that you're going to get some weird twist, whether it's too many souls or not enough souls, or just something weird is going to happen. The more cards are in there, the more chance there is for something to go wrong, right? And there are rules there for how you can customize a deck and just start out with a sort of a leaner stack that's going to be a bit more curated experience. I've not tried doing that. That's definitely like an option there.
Yeah, you can kind of tune the game, like tune the game engine pretty much.
Yeah,
kind of like pulling the levers on the difficulty of a game of Sid Meier's Civilization or something like that. Well, right?
Much like Magic, is that name again? It is a fairly robust system for customizing. Like you can, like Magic can play Commander or Modern or Legal or Dandan or all these different formats, right? So this has the competitive version and this cooperative version. There's a solo tied into that. But I've also seen a bunch of people craft sort of other versions, whether it's setting up an unlock system like in the video game, or a sort of stacking the monster deck to actually have that sense of progression of it getting harder as you dig down. So if you're willing to do the work, there is quite a lot of ways in which you can customize this to your liking, if you're willing to put in that effort, obviously, right? So do we want to talk a little bit more about that cooperative version?
Yeah, let's talk about a bit about that.
Yeah, so by the rules, supposedly it is basically one or two player. So if you're playing solo, you basically two-hand two characters, or you can play two player, one each. We did try it at three players, and I mean, balance in this game. This game is not designed to be balanced, right? So it's not the biggest concern. We handicapped ourselves in a couple of ways, but it was mostly just to see how everything interacts, right? Broadly, I found it a better experience because you weren't dying constantly. You're not trying to get into this way all the time. You have a better chance to actually build up those engines and get more items, find more interesting ways to combo them. Both within your own items and with each other's items. And I found that back and forth and finding those new synergies to be one of the sort of the best elements of the game. And so you can obviously really focus on that on in the cooperative version, right?
Yeah, and I don't think we even like cheated per se. Sure, we had three characters, but I think the two-player cooperative version has a time built-in time limit anyway. So it's basically, it's over in 8 turns.
Yes,
I think
eight
is what
rounds,
the limit
basically.
Is.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, so you can do that whether it's three players or two players or one player, right? So it's basically the same amount of effort was put in. Maybe not all players in a three-player game are going to get an equal number of turns, but that's probably fine. You could just randomize who starts. I think it worked out fine, and I think the stipulation is you just have to have a fixed number of souls between you.
Yes, collectively have four souls.
And we found it. We found it quite simple to achieve those four souls, but like you alluded to earlier, you could probably just make it slightly more difficult for yourself by just upping that number slightly.
Well, there are difficulties like get to six souls or eight souls, right? Different difficulty modes, or find other ways of increasing the challenge. There are specific challenges, I believe, on available online. I played this solo a couple of times and found it a fair bit trickier, but mostly just because it was bad luck. In playing cooperative mode, you might get a bunch of cards that work better for the competitive version and vice versa. Right. So you could go to the effort of curating a perfect cooperative deck of cards.
I found that the inspiration was not just coming from games like Magic the Gathering. Mm. I mean, let's be honest, the term stack of card resolution.
That was the scariest. For all the horrific themes in this game, seeing the stack was a jump scare.
I think there's even a diagram of the stack, isn't there? Or there's something in the rule book. Mm. But I've not listened.
Triggered abilities.
I don't recall any board games mention a stack that I've played recently. So there's that. But the other game it reminded me of a great deal was of just simply like Dominion. It's not a deck building game, but just the fact that there's that degree of customization of being able to sort of like tune the style of game that you play, and some of the card resolution gave me like strong Dominion vibes. And maybe like this game's not that old, but surely the original Binding of Isaac was. Maybe the designer, Edmund McMillan, was perhaps playing games like Dominion at the same time.
Possibly. I did feel a little bit like it took a little too much inspiration from Magic the Gathering in some of the wrong ways. Like, it's a robust system, and like the tapping and untapping system works really well. You can react to other players. But some of the language, it's a little too complicated for this weight of game, for this chaotic a game, I feel. Because like, for one thing, the rule book is like this tiny credit card-sized flip book. Right, which gets you the basics, but doesn't leaves a lot of blank areas. And there is online, you can get a printout of a much more robust rulebook, but it's like 50 pages of text that looks like the legal manual from a war game. And I really would have liked something in between, like a larger rulebook with some clear examples that it was a little more streamlined. Just some of the language in the way the rules are set out, like. The rules don't say you can play one loot card per turn. It says you, at the start of your turn, you receive one loot play that you may spend on this turn. You can play a loot card if you have priority and you have a free loot play. And like, that is so wordy and unnecessarily, right? And it's great for rules lawyering if you need that. I don't, like, this game didn't need to be that complicated though.
That was one of the elements that reminded me of Dominion, just the fact that you like start with the base of the ABC, right? In Dominion, you have the one action, one buy, one coin resolution round. So like just the fact that you kind of like you can buff that over the course of a game by getting more equipment and getting more loot buys. And basically you can by default play at least two loot cards within the span of a round between turns, because you have the one you get for free, and then you can tap any of your character cards to play another loot card, and then there might be other cards that allow you to play more loot. We didn't really describe what loot does. Most of them I found just give you coins.
Yeah.
And of varying ranges between like 1, 2, 3, or 4 coins a lot of them gave. And then some of them are just effect cards. So they might say, you know, pick the top card off of this discard or something like that and add it to your hand or something to that effect.
Or do one damage. I think the bombs are pretty common, like deal one damage to a monster or another player.
Right. There are a lot of like one-off cards that you can kind of hold in your hand like an instant in, say, a game like Magic the Gathering, as opposed to something that's more permanent, like the items that we talked about. So there's the treasure deck. It's got the gold background, and the treasure cards can be either these gold colored cards that have a tap icon on them. So they can be used once by tapping them, then they get exhausted. And of course, you can untap a lot of cards to the benefit of other equipment. And then you have these silver colored treasure cards that have more passive effects, and they can be used multiple times whenever that situation just happens to happen. So that, like, basically the effects kind of compound and multiply, and the complexity and the depth grows if you're able to acquire those things. And each treasure card costs 10 coin to acquire, and you start the game with 3. So most of the time, you're either getting coins from playing loot cards or by defeating monsters. Monsters will give you loot or straight up coins.
Yeah, that complexity is tricky, because I mean that's the when you start stacking items and combine them in fun ways, that's the fun part of the game, right? But at the same time, that is the point where you start having to go to the stack and resolving priority. And I like Magic the Gathering. Whenever I get to the point of the game where I have to start doing that, I'm in too deep, right? Like, take a step back. Yeah, I just really would have liked it to take a little more inspiration from other games, like even Dominion. I felt like it needed more of that to maybe streamline some of that. Even just not even the rules, it's the language as an onboarding experience.
Yeah, this game, I mean, like, I'm just going to roll into criticisms here. Like, but this game, like, it has something there. It has something there. The core of the game engine is interesting. It's robust enough to handle.
And customizable.
Customizable. It can handle a lot of different situations. The biggest complaint a lot of people are going to have is this game is swingy as heck. It can go in terms of game length, in terms of fairness, in terms of difficulty, from easy to hard, it's going to swing.
It can just be mean. Right.
Sure.
If you're playing with the wrong group, and it's a very mean game. But I mean, so is Magic, right? Like, it's tricky, because in Magic, the aim is to take down your opponent, attack them, take away their health. In this game, this is more like Keyforge, in the sense that your goal is actually to get these four souls, or to get four keys in Keyforge, and you're interfering with each other in order to stop that. But like, it can feel, because your goal isn't directly to attack each other, it can feel so much more mean when you do so.
Yeah. Funny enough, the game I played most recently with my oldest kid, the short one that wrapped in about half an hour, was not short because we added those extra goals. I mean, I was certainly looking for those extra soul goals, but that was not how I won. I won because I had a loot card in my hand that let me play it to earn a soul. For me, it was the first to 3 souls. For my oldest, it was the first to 4 souls.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just lucked out. Obviously, my kid could have made me discard my cards, but they didn't know I had that. So that's very fortune driven, right? Unless you know that's in there, you can't control it. And maybe if we play it again in the future, or we'll decide together to just remove that particular card from the deck. So you have to work a little bit at it. You might have to work a little bit at it to tune this game to be suitable for your group.
Yeah.
And most games don't make you do that.
No.
Some games, like Magic, do make you do that, make you tune the deck to your liking, tune the game to your liking, and people feel an additional sense of reward for that they were able to customize it to their liking.
Yeah.
So this game, I think, is definitely not going to be for everyone. But some people are going to absolutely have a blast with it. My oldest kid, who's 12, I think really likes this game.
Audience for all those poop jokes.
Sure. Yeah. And they don't know anything about the depressing subplot of Isaac and his mom. But my oldest was already asking to play with their similarly aged 11, 12-year-old friends. So I think I'm going to let them play for the most part. The card art is not that bad.
Take out a few cards, maybe.
Maybe. I'll have to review some of them to see if they're accessible.
That is worth noting. I think we hinted at it earlier. The themes here can be sensitive, shall we say, dealing with some sort of transgressive themes of religion and body horror and family and trauma.
Yeah.
There might be some triggering themes there for some people, or just upsetting things, like even like pet death is one of the themes, right? It's not a theme that I find particularly appealing. I don't find it, like, it doesn't bother me, but I can see why it might bother other people. It's not the draw. I mean, it's very cartoony and sort of cutesy at the same time.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was playing with my oldest kid, who's more into these sort of strategic games. Then my youngest came back from playing with their friends. My youngest looked at the card art and was like, oh, this game is so cute, but super gross.
I kind of love it. The early 2000s internet edgy sort of Newgrounds flash games. It's very just, much that era.
Just like the box art or whatever from the game, like it's got this kind of like sketchy, like this is what a junior high kid was drawing in their sketchbook while trying to ignore what the teacher is trying to teach him in class, sort of like mini edgelord.
It is a cohesive style for sure. And I mean it's nostalgic for me as just having been a fan of the video game, right? But for fair warning going in, that might, there may be a concern.
If you're a fan of the video game, which I pretty much assume that you will be if you're interested in giving this a shot, it's very faithful to the source material. All the character art looks fantastic. All the card art, and I think most of it's original because it doesn't exactly look like it's of the same creative flair, but it's in a higher fidelity than the video game ever was.
Yeah,
it looks very slick. It looks very polished. The production quality is not a lot to write home about. Very basic, just cards.
So you complain about not having counters. I mean, luckily I have the deluxe edition, which came with like health tokens and other counters. I mean, that's also true to Magic the Gathering. Like, how many cards in Magic say add a +1/+1 counter that doesn't come with the game? I literally just last week went and bought a little mini pack of mini D6s.
Yeah, this was a nice counters touch, in Magic
the Gathering.
The roll of pennies.
That
was really cute. So this came with two rolls of pennies. So I only opened one so I could keep the other side. You're going to want to throw in at least about, like, say, 8 or 10 health tokens for the monsters as you deal damage to them. And that's pretty much the only other thing you need. I just think...
A bit of dice helps, but yeah.
Yeah, it comes with 1d6 and 1d8. I didn't really see the need to use that d8 that often.
Some treasures, for example, say whenever you roll a 1, add a counter to this card. So I sort of flip-flop between using like little counted tokens or just having a dice tracking the number on there, right? So having extra dice on hand with certain cards.
Right. So what do you feel about the game?
Yeah, I enjoy it. As coming from a fan of the original game, I think it's an incredibly robust system. It's possible to meet a lot of different tastes here. It if you're willing to do the work, it can be customized in a lot of really clever and inventive ways. I particularly found the cooperative version more engaging. So solo mode, it did fall into a little bit of the... I think we're talking about this in terms of Bellatro, and it comes down to basically finding new ways to break the game. So I think I'd mostly want to play it cooperatively with other people and have that back and forth, rather than just sitting there by myself. But I did find it a really interesting experience. Have intentions of playing it some more and noodling with those rule sets. The one I really want to try is just, what would it be like if everyone had 3 health instead of 2? That's 3. You start with 3 health in the video game, right? But also just a little less easy to just one shot other players with no warning, and just a little more likely to start building up those engines. And it would probably make the game a little shorter too, because you're not dying and losing items all the time. Yeah, so I
think this game sort of begs for house rules like that. So
exactly, yeah,
seems like a good.
It's an engine, right? An engine to make your own game. And I said that will require work. It's just tricky because I've got the deluxe edition, which has everything in it, and so there's a lot of weird cards in there that are like promos or alt art stuff that's not entirely balanced with just the core game. So, but you'd probably have a better experience if you just got the base game and played with just that. It would be a more curated experience than with the all-in box.
Yeah, and I didn't play with the expansions. I just played with the base game myself, even though I have the expansion with me that you gave me. The expansion does fit nicely in the original box, by the way, so that's really nice. Excellent. that's there. And I didn't feel like I was really missing anything. I learned that this is the second edition rules, and then the gameplay played quite smoothly. I thought there was a couple of sort of question marks I had, like, does the monster or player health heal at any point? And I think you and I, when we played at your place, we played it that the monsters did heal.
I think like everything heals after every player's turn, as far as I
know. I didn't see that anywhere in the rules. In the
I'm referring. I had like the 50 pages of the giant of the all-in rules, which
There you go. I mean, that's showing the difference between the mini booklet.
There's a lot of information missing in that mini booklet. Yeah, and I think that's one of the core issues. It's, again, it's a good game. I think there's definitely fun to be found here if you're going to dig, but you have to. It is work required here.
Yeah. For me, I'll just say that I don't think I would pull this game out to play by my choice, but I would play it anytime my kid asked for it. It's a fun compromise to a more party style game. I'd probably play with this with my kid and their friends. No problem. But if you want something that plays more smoothly, more swiftly, and is a little bit lighter in tone, I probably would recommend another take that style game like Gather Your Party instead of this, because it's just more less streamlined. Of an investment, you know? It's less work. It plays a little bit more smoothly. I mean, I like the fact that this, The Binding of Isaac, Four Souls, is a tiny bit more crunchy than that.
And it's sort of a game that you want to be coming back to multiple times, right? Like Gather Your Party, you play a few times and like you have seen everything there is to offer. Whereas this is going to be different every. If you subscribe to the philosophy that variety equals replayability, this is the game for you.
Yeah, and I mean replayability is not that enticing for me, but also seeing different things is cool. Like
Roll the dice, cool stuff happens, or a bomb blows up and you die. Like it's a fun just roll and see what happens game. Yep.
See where it takes
you. And a lot of interaction. If you've got a group that likes high interaction and high friction, there's definitely fun to be had here.
Yeah, I like it a mite better than Munchkin.
Munchkin like was the game that got me into the hobby. I don't like the game anymore, but there is a place for Munchkin, and I don't want to begrudge anyone who does enjoy it still, right? Yeah. I had one too many games run till 3 a.m. in the morning, and no one would let it end. But there's a place in the hobby for those games, right?
100%. You could say that about any game, so I'm certainly not going to gatekeep this to anyone. I wholeheartedly recommend this to anyone who feels like you like that less serious, less tight, more swingy, more unpredictable style of game. I think you'll enjoy this a lot. There's some interesting stuff going on.
Absolutely. Okay.
Great. Shall we talk about the next game we're going to be covering? Anytime.
Yeah. Great. So, next episode, we are going back to video games, and we're going under the sea. We're going to explore another Crab's Treasure. You discussed this in the previous episode in the playlist, right? So you've already been playing a little bit of this.
I have.
I haven't started yet, but I have a daughter who's a huge fan of crustaceans, inexplicably. So I've been looking forward to checking this out.
What was that game? Aquanauts? What's that?
Octonauts is the show.
That's watches, that undersea show. It's got a similar vibe. Yeah, another Crab's Treasure. Listen to last episode where we talked about it a tiny bit, and we'll talk about it at length. Not next episode, because next episode's the playlist.
True, yes.
Next main episode, we'll be talking about another Crab's Treasure. Currently on Xbox Game Pass. Presumably, it's on other platforms as well, on PC. Next time.
Pretty sure it's on Switch and all the platforms, yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun Souls-like.
Well, if you have any questions or comments on Four Souls or another Crab's Treasure or any other game, you can join the club at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or our website omnigamers.club.
That's right. We'd love to hear your feedback about games that you're playing, games that you'd like us to cover, and about really anything that you want to talk about. Go hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube, please. Once again, we are on YouTube if you're only still listening to this in podcast form. And also leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. Leave some comments on our videos. Please make them nice. We're just doing this for free, so we'd love to hear that feedback. And until next time, I guess, please have a balanced diet of gaming.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot. Bye.